Hello, everybody. Are we waiting for one person? Are
no.
Nope. Everybody's in the room, are they? Right. Apparently, that's a new show, isn't it? Back in the room. Showing hypnosis in a bad light. People who want to be on TV and show off, and then they might be on hypnosis. It wouldn't matter either way. They'd still perform in that way. Okay, I'm Stephen Blake. I am a therapist. I help people to overcome the problems in their life, whether that's a temporary thing dealing with current issues and how they handle it, or long-term problems that they've had, things like lack of self-worth, that feeling of not being worthy. It seems to be typically run through most people's lives. And I deal with core work, so I actually do breakthrough sessions with people, and that is where something's affected them for as long as they can remember, whether it's an anxiety or depression or many other things. And it's a crazy thing, but these things, even though you've had them 30, 40, 50 years, some people have had them, I can help people get rid of them, usually in one session. Right? It can take hours, but it's one session. And I like to work that way because my memory is not that good. So if somebody came and saw me over 5 or 6 sessions, I'd sort of be having to think, what did they say to me, what happened, and what did they feel like, and so on. And the work that I tend to do, instead of sort of you gradually get better over weeks and weeks and weeks, or years sometimes, you can go to counselling for. And it seems to take, you're even not aware of how much better you're getting because it's so slow. The progress I have with people, even though I'll see them for several hours in one sitting, there's a bit of that, there's like a 10-minute patch where it seems to be getting worse for them, and then it's gone. And it's quite miraculous, and I see it every day, but it's still a miracle to me. And people sort of come in and they're, you know, oh, sort of woe is me, and they leave with a skip in the step, and they seem to be about 2 inches tall and a big smile on their face, and I get lots of hugs, and it's really nice. And it's not that I do anything vastly different to anybody else. It's just that I don't believe in treating symptoms. So if somebody comes along and says, oh, I've got this problem, but I've also got this problem, I've got this problem, I've got this problem, let's deal with this one. I always say, no, let's hear all your problems, and then I'll look at them all together, and then I'll say, ah, what's the thread that runs through it? And I'd like to say it's 99% of the time it's lack of self-worth, but it isn't. It's 100% of the time it's a lack of self-worth. There's just something there that people don't like themselves, certainly don't love themselves. And there's a nice little test for this. And all I want you to imagine is I've put you in front of a mirror now, and I've asked you to say, I love you, to yourself in front of it. Could anybody do that? Any volunteers? And it's difficult for some people to even say, I like you, looking in the mirror. I don't know why we do it. It's a defence mechanism, because if we reject us, who else can? You know, the person that should love us the most rejects us. Well, it's almost like we think, well, then nobody else can reject us. And it's just the opposite. Because if you feel that towards yourself, then you actually can't believe that anybody else would like you or love you or whatever. And when we do that, we tend to push people away a bit. So people give us compliments, and we go, oh no, not me, you know, oh no. Or you say, oh, you look lovely in that. Oh, I just threw this on, I've had it years, and they do all that. And it's not actually very nice, because if you think of the person that gives the compliment or whatever, it's like they've gone out and they thought, oh, Stephen, I'd love a pair of blue glasses, and I've spent a lot of money on this, and I've really thought about it, and he really needs some. And they come along and they go, hey, Stephen, blue glasses. And I go, thanks. Okay, what were we saying? And they'd feel rejected. And would they think next time, oh, what can I buy Stephen? Not likely. But we do that every time we push somebody away and reject them. We're actually saying, don't say nice things about me. And the reason is, if we can't say nice things about us and accept it, How can we accept that somebody else would say nice things about us and mean it? So we're always looking for, well, what's in it for them if they're saying nice things? Something wrong here. I don't trust you because you're saying nice things about me and I'm not nice. And the weirdest thing is, I have some fantastic clients and they come in, and I'm pretty good at weighing people up quickly, and they're lovely people. And they come and see me and they tell me that nobody likes them. And I know that's not true. And they're the most likeable of people. And I had a woman who was forced onto my stand one day. I went to a show at Newark and two of her friends came to see me. One for a 20-minute session that she paid for, and I helped her with a problem. And another friend just came along and said, what is it you do? And I actually helped her with a problem in about 10 minutes flat. And they forced this woman into my booth and said, Stephen will help you. And they just pushed her in and left her. And she was a very short, petite woman. And as soon as I said, what's the problem then? She just cried, and she cried and cried and cried. And eventually I got out of her. I said, well, you know, what's the issue? She said, nobody likes me. And I went, well, that's not true. And she went, it is, nobody likes me. And I said, I like you. I said, and I don't even know you. So I said, you're not allowed to say that ever again now. Now that you know that I like you, in the future when you say nobody likes me, you'll have to say, well, nobody likes me apart from this Stephen I met once at this fair. Right? You'll have to change it now. And I'd nearly won her over. And I also said, well, your friends like you because they've pushed you in here and they know that you need help. And I couldn't quite win her over to actually say, you know, she would come along and see me. And that was a year ago. And at the last event I went to Newark, she came on the stand, not crying this time, and said, can you help me? And I did. And it was the most wonderful thing to actually help her with it. And she'd had anxiety for about 40-odd years, and it just went during the session with me. And so I saw her from the distraught thing she was a year before to a slightly better state that she came to see me, but then she left in a wonderful state. And the great thing about the brain is when it works on something and it believes it, it carries on in that mode. So if you form an anxiety or something when you're younger, it carries on working on that and it keeps building it and building it and building it. And if you have a problem that started when you're younger, it actually doesn't get better as you get older. It actually gets worse because you keep nipping down the same sort of anxiety pathway. And even though it's sort of you keep rehearsing it over and over again, you can get rid of it, because as soon as the brain goes, oh, that's not true, it can't fit it back in the same bit of your brain. The way your memory works is, excuse me, just need the water. Sorry. The way that memory works is, when we think of an event that's happened in the past, if we tell it to somebody else, for instance, a funny story, you go, oh, Uncle Fred at this party, and you tell this story. And while you're telling it, you exaggerate the bits that were funny to make them even more funny. And as you tell it, you see the reaction of everybody, and you think, oh, that got a bit funnier when I added that bit in. When you actually put it back in your memory, you never have the real memory of what happened the first time. You now override it with the new story you made up that's slightly different. And if you tell it again and you had a bit more fun in it, eventually you change the story absolutely completely and it just gets funnier and funnier and funnier. And this is why if the police interview as a witness, they'll do it straight after the event and they won't keep coming back to you and saying, well, what happened? Because every time you tell it, you'll change something in it. But when you change it, that becomes real. It's as though that's what actually happened. And the same happens when we revisit the past and we think of something bad. If we go back and we revisit it, particularly if we exaggerate it, So, for instance, if I got mugged by a guy this high, right, out of here today, and I came in all battered and bruised, and I was a bit embarrassed, I'd probably come in and say, I was attacked by three fellas who were this big, they were, and they overpowered me, and they held me down, and they kicked me, and they battered me, whereas this little guy just thumped me once. But as soon as I change that story, if I tell it often enough, I eventually believe that story myself, and it becomes the reality of it. And I would even pass a lie detector test then, that three guys had mugged me. So anything we absorb when we're younger, if we get the wrong learning from it, and then we exaggerate it, and then we keep rehearsing it in our head, oh, that terrible thing that happened to me the other week, oh, that terrible thing that happened last month, oh, that terrible thing that happened, it just gets worse and worse and worse. So today's talk is about brain bargaining. And brain bargaining is unique to me. It's something that I understand is the basis behind all these things. Because it's so easy to get a problem in your life, and it's a problem program that runs. And it runs at what would have been an appropriate time for it to run. It's to do with when you first learned it, you learned the wrong program. So after that, it always runs the same program because it hasn't got an alternative. And what I do is I talk to your unconscious mind. And a lot of people think, well, that's got to be trance or whatever to talk to your unconscious. But actually, you talk to your unconscious every day of your life. If you look in the mirror and go, oh, God, I'm fat, you're actually talking to your unconscious mind. But it doesn't understand negatives. So if you go, oh, I'm fat, it goes, oh, you're fat, are you? And it believes you. Right? And it also goes, what can I give you that you keep asking for? Well, if you keep looking in the mirror going, I'm fat, it goes, you want to be fat. And it tries everything it can to make you fat. Which is, it then looks at these cream buns and it goes, I know I shouldn't be having these, but suddenly I have a strange craving for them. Right? And then you eat the wrong things. And that's your unconscious trying to get you what it thinks you asked for. Because you keep looking at this thing and going, fat. So when we have thoughts about what we want, most of the time we have thoughts about what we don't want. What we don't want to happen, instead of what we do want to happen. And your unconscious is there to get you anything you ask for. It really is the law of attraction. So if you're at the end of a relationship, for instance, and you think, oh, I hope we don't break up, I hope we don't split up, all you're concentrating on is breaking up. And it doesn't hear the, I hope we don't, it hears the, I hope we don't break up. I hope we don't break up. And you, the more you repeat it, the more likely it is that you'll break up. Because your unconscious will keep hearing break up. And then it'll look for, how can I solve this for them? They want to break up. Right, what do we need to do? Well, I need to look for a flat. Oh, we need to sort out who has the cat and the dog. Who's going to get the car? Who's going to get the kids? And who buy the new bed? And all. And it's looking for the answer to what you're thinking about, which is breaking up. If you're thinking about the wrong thing, it's always, well, what's the opposite of that? So the opposite to ending relationship is... starting one, yes. So, if you start a relationship, things are just fine, aren't they? I mean, you set off a little bit tentative. You sort of not sure about the person, and after a while it's, yeah, I really love this person. And even the way they squeeze the toothpaste, it's, oh, it's a little bit quirky, right? I don't know why he squeezes the toothpaste in the middle, and, you know, it could be annoying, but it's not. It's really nice. 10 years later, they squeeze the toothpaste in the middle, you want to kill them. It's exactly the same thing, it's just in a different context. And so if we're at the end of a relationship, or we think it's coming to the end, you can't change the other person. You can't say, why aren't you more loving towards me, you know, this, that and the other, or I'll leave you if. That will just all be based on ending. If you start to become like you were at the beginning of the relationship, it's quite likely that something in that person, even if it's not at the conscious level, will recognise the person they fell in love with. And it's quite likely they'll change into the person you first met, who you fell in love with. And so as soon as you concentrate on what you want, which is, I don't want this to break up, which means I want it to be like it was, as soon as you concentrate on making it like it was, it changes. And you do that. Because your unconscious can only ever do, it can only ever run the programs that are already installed. And so if you haven't got a program there that's suitable, it doesn't know to make one up. It's perfectly capable of doing so. And in fact, the thing I'll tell you, I can tell you now instead of waiting until the end, is that if you give your unconscious mind permission to make a new program, it can be incredibly inventive and creative. Its capacity is beyond all known means, right? But you have to give it this is what I would like. I don't know how I'm going to get it yet, but you work on it. Because at the moment, your heart's running, your stomach's running, there's blood going round, your temperature's being changed, your pH values in your stomach. The brain is operating all of these things. It does hundreds of thousands of things every minute. If you give it another job, it just goes, another job, I've got 1,001 things now. No problem. Whereas your conscious mind holds so little data, it's nearly not worth bothering with. Right? According to the research that I've done, your conscious mind holds 8 bits of data, which doesn't mean anything to you, unless I tell you that if I told you now my phone number, one digit at once, that would fill your conscious mind. Right? You'd have no capacity for anything else. So you could either wipe that out and listen to me, or you could hold on to that number but not listen to me. You wouldn't be able to absorb anything if you hold on to the number. Right? That's how little bit of the conscious mind you have. So the conscious mind is only there to actually say, I would like to do this. It's the decision-making thing. And if you don't decide to do anything, your unconscious mind goes, what's the program? I feel like this at the moment. This sort of thing's happening around me. What normally happens in this thing? And if you're anxious or you're depressed, it goes, oh, I'll get out of the way of it. Or if you're depressed, it goes, I don't want to know. I don't want to even see it. And it turns on that program. And it's just as easy to turn off that program. Because if you've learned something way back when you were younger and it's led to anxiety, it's not that you're going to learn from having anxiety. It's that you've already learned the wrong thing. So to me, anxiety is, it's never at an age when you're an adult. You don't suddenly get anxiety later on in life. It might appear that way sometimes, but it's usually been triggered off by something you did as a child. So as a child, let's treat it as though you're 20, something bad happens. You're quite rational. You can go, oh, that was horrible, but, you know, it won't happen again. I was out late and, you know, I should have seen it coming. There was all these yobs about, everybody was drunk, you know, got mugged or whatever. Whereas if you're young and something happens and it's traumatic at that moment and it's frightening and you don't know what the hell's happening, you have this sudden surge of these chemicals going around your body, you probably even freeze on the spot, and you're going, what's happening? You have no clue that it's called anger or fear or whatever you feel in that moment. And the only thing you think of is, I don't want to ever feel like this again. And as you think that, the unconscious goes, right, oh, they don't want to feel like this again, how can I stop that? In some cases, it totally wipes your memory of that event. Right? You won't ever get to see it again. But despite that, what it'll do is, well, you got hurt that time. And anxiety is, I will make you hypervigilant from now on, looking for danger. And if I make you hypervigilant, you might see it coming next time just before it happens, and you'll be able to escape. And that's all anxiety is. It's based on one event where you felt absolutely terrible and you've gone, don't want this again. And your unconscious has helped you put this program together that goes, right, look out for it in the future. And for the rest of your life, probably at a conscious level, you're not going, ooh, wonder where the danger is. But yet you just have that feeling something's going to go wrong. And you're constantly looking around going, what's going to go, oh, I know something's going to go wrong. And there's almost pleasure comes when you spot what it is. Because it's like, well, I'm not being stupid. There is danger. There is terrible things happening in the world. But if all you ever look for is the bad things that's going to happen, what do you see the most of? You see what you're looking for. And if good things happen, you might go, oh, there's a good thing happened. But I know something bad's going to happen in a minute. And it almost overrides it. So you spend most of your life in fleeting moments of happiness, and then the rest of it just closes in. So anxiety is this hyper state of alert where you're just, oh, something bad's going to happen. Oh, there it is, yeah, found it, you know. But you don't even relax at that point because you know something else bad is going to happen. And the alternative that it might give you in that moment of fear or panic or whatever is it might say, how can we avoid this again? It might go, let's get depressed. Because depressed is, I don't want to know. I don't want to, yeah. No, if I don't see it, it won't happen. And that's what you're doing. You're hiding away in this dark hole. That's why it's a darkness depression. Because you're hiding in this dark hole, hoping people don't spot you. If they don't spot you, they won't hurt you. So to me, those two things, anxiety and depression, start exactly the same. It's just your coping method of dealing with it. So you would think that if something happens at 6 and you're now 46, you've had it for 40 years, you're never going to get out of it, right? Because it's getting worse. So why would you think you could ever get out of that? So the thing I do called brain bargaining is I talk to your unconscious. And actually, even though you probably don't realise it, I'm actually talking to your unconscious now. It's just that your conscious gets a chance to listen as well. Okay, so you can take this on board or not, as the case may be, through your conscious, go, that's interesting, or no, I don't need to know that. So you're filtering all the time with your conscious about what you need to know. But your unconscious hears every word I say. And so it's listening and it's going, oh, will this help her? Will this help her at all? And so if I say to your unconscious, look, this program you're running of anxiety or depression or whatever, at the time you made it, there was a really good reason for it, because you were hurt and you wanted to hide from it or you wanted to not feel it again. And that was a really good thing to do. So it's not your unconscious's fault that it runs that program, because you made that program up. It's just that you made it up as a child. And you don't really want to live the rest of your life run by a five-year-old or whatever age you were. And so I'll talk to the unconscious and I'll say, look, this thing that you think is a safety blanket, if I actually come up to you now and go, right, I'll take your anxiety or depression away, whoosh, it's like a small child with a blanket and they suck on it and everything and they won't be parted with it, and you go up and you take it off them. They cry. And adults are no different. If I just come up and snatch your anxiety or depression off you, I've got your safety blanket. So I have to bargain with your unconscious and say, look, that thing that you think's a safety blanket, it's actually made of barbed wire. Right? So when you suck on it and that, it cuts your lips and everything else. So it's not nice. It's actually not nice. It's hurting you, and it was meant to protect you. And as soon as your unconscious gets that, it's not allowed to carry on doing it anymore, because its whole job is to protect you. Because it runs all the programs you were born with, how to breathe, how to run blood around your body and everything else. And everything you've learned then since is about staying alive. And most of it's about being drawn to things that are good for you and away from things that are bad for you. Think away from danger and everything else. That's what your unconscious does all the time in the background. That's why you can't walk in front of a bus. He just goes, "Oi, no, 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 that would hurt." And it holds you back. So you've got this thing going on that at the moment, if you've got an issue, it's been installed by you at an early age, and it's also thinking it's a good idea. But if your anxiety keeps hurting you and hurting you, hurting you, or depression or whatever you've got, then it's not a good idea anymore. And the thing that happened to you back then is probably never going to happen to you ever again, or anything as bad as that's ever going to happen again. So you haven't learned a lesson from it, and you're not still learning a lesson from it. You've just learnt the wrong lesson. So when I talk to the unconscious mind, and I can do this without putting people in trance, or I can put people in trance. And the only difference is, if I put somebody in trance, the conscious bit of the brain gets out of the way. And it's got a thing called a critical faculty. So it's sort of listening and going, do I need to know this? Do I need to hear this? No, that's rubbish. Out it goes. But based on how you feel about yourself. So if I say anything about, oh, I'd make you feel good, you'd be able to look in the mirror and say, I love you, your conscious brain will go, don't want that. Don't want to be having any of that. I'll be a big head if I did that. So it goes, throws it out. Whereas if I actually put you into trance and chat to you and you let me in, it'll go straight past that, and I can talk to your unconscious and bargain with it that way. But in general life, I can do this, where I'll chat to the unconscious. Now, when I'm talking to it, I treat it like a very clever child, right? Because it does look after you in every way, and it is incredibly intelligent. But it almost only either does as it's told, or it does the program it's got in there. But it does one or the other. And if you tell it to do something, but it's got a better program in there, it'll run the program however much you tell it. This is why willpower is not very good. If you're a liking for chocolate biscuits and you eat them every day, and you go, I'm going to give up the chocolate biscuits, it will go, but you've done this every day. You must really like them. So why are we doing this other thing? Oh, no, I'm going to do jogging now instead. And he goes, well, you won't keep that up, will you? Then you'll be back on the chocolate biscuits, and so I might as well leave you on the chocolate biscuits. So we fight and fight and fight to not eat the chocolate biscuits, but it goes, well, you like them, why not have them? Right? Because we've trained it that we like it. Right? So when you change anything, if you change it at a conscious level, it's quite difficult because you've got 8 bits of data. So you're thinking, oh, I mustn't do this, I mustn't do this, which is totally wrong anyway because you're thinking about it now. So if you're thinking, I mustn't eat the chocolate biscuits, you're actually thinking chocolate biscuits, which then brings that saliva to your mouth that goes chocolate biscuits. It doesn't understand that I mustn't eat. So we're often thinking about the wrong thing all the time. But this thing like anxiety or depression is an automatic program. You don't have any choice over it. So something happens to us and we can't deal with it. We actually go into either anxiety or depression. And that's our little safety shield. We go, oh, no, I can't deal with this. I don't want to know. I don't want to know. Right? And we back behind it. And in fact, we are dealing with it. We're just dealing with it badly. You know, I've got a client who drives off in a car and just stays there for 3 hours until she feels better and then drives back. By which time the family argument's blown over and she's got out of it. So it's a sort of quite a nice technique for doing it. So I've taken a depression away now. I've now got a trainer how to deal with situations, or else, with or without the depression, she's still going to drive off for 3 hours and come back when it's sorted out. And she's learning now how... I took the depression away, but she's now learning how to deal with people. So there was an incident of a family thing that she had to deal with the other week. And I said, well, what's the issue? And she said, oh, I can't cope with it, you know. I need to see my mum because I can't see her without my dad, and he won't come and see me, but I don't like her and I like him, and I don't know what to do, and it's all conflict and all that. And it turns out her mum sort of is quite nasty about everybody, including her. And I said, just name one thing she does. And she said, well, my dad will come in and he'll sit down and he'll grab the paper, and he used to be an editor, so he reads the local paper just to pick fault with it, and he enjoys that. And mum will come through and go, oh, dad, And she'll whisper things to me about Dad that are all negative, and I don't know what to do about it. And I said, well, why don't you have some fun? Your normal method of dealing with it is to go into this dark space and go, oh, it's horrible, I don't know what I'm going to do. But why don't you just change it? When Mum comes in and goes, oh, Dad, you repeat back 5 times as loud as you'd normally talk, going, Dad's what? Dad's a bastard? No. So that Dad can hear. And she didn't get as far as that, but she did something, and she challenged this woman, and she shut up. And she never had any problems with that all weekend. And this was from sort of, I can't deal with this, Mum's coming, I might even kill myself, to had a bit of fun with it. And actually rang me up and was laughing about this. This is all I did. Right? So you can change things and how they work. So when I talk to the unconscious, I treat it as a small child, which means I never ask it for a no. Have you all got kids? Yeah, even if they're grown up or whatever. No? Right. Okay. But you've dealt with kids. Okay. If you go up to a kid and they misunderstand you and you go, would you like a lollipop? And they mishear it, they'll go, no. And then they go, oh, lollipop, opportunity missed. And then you go, I said, do you want a lollipop? And then they'll go, no. And they'll stick with that no, won't they? Because they're really stubborn. And they go, no. And you go, but it's a lollipop. And you're like, no. And off they go. And your brain's no different. It's not stubborn, but once you ask it for a no, it gets in the line of doing no's. It's expecting a no next. And it answers no. So I never ask it for no's. I don't give it that opportunity. I only ever ask for a yes. So I'll talk to the brain. Now, has anybody here got pain? Is anybody in pain at the moment? Yeah. You have neck pain at the moment. Have you had it a long time?
Yeah.
Okay. Would you like to turn it off?
I've tried turning it off.
No. Would you like to turn it off in this moment now?
Yeah.
Okay. So, I just want you to think about your neck. This is an example for all of us, and it's not just about pain. This is how you work with the brain to bargain with it. So if you watch the example, that'll be fine. Would you like to come out here? Would you be all right to do that? Yeah, you're right. Okay, it'll be worth it because you get rid of your pain. No. We're not having none of that language in here. Okay, see, started off with a no. Could have picked the wrong one here, you know. Anybody else got pain? No, no. Actually, has anybody else got pain? Because I can do this multiples.
No, all right.
I do deal with that, but it takes more than 5 minutes. Okay, this takes literally a few minutes. So, when I talk to the unconscious, I'm also talking to your unconscious. So I'm going to tell you a little bit about pain that you'll understand, and we can see if it's possible then that pain could be turned off. Okay, so the pain that you have in your neck, do you know what causes it?
Yeah, put this down.
Right, okay. Now, this is a medical issue. There's nothing they can do with it other than give you painkillers.
No, injections.
Painkillers or injections, okay. So if you have a pain somewhere, that is a message from your body saying, do something about it. Right?
It comes from your brain for a start.
It comes from your brain, yeah. So you have a message that if you cut your finger, it's not actually your finger that hurts, it's the brain goes, that bit of the finger hurts. So it tells you about it. And I've got a brilliant thing on my website about an Australian doctor who walked through the bush in Australia. And he felt a thorn hit his leg, and he thought it was a thorn, and a few minutes later he collapsed because actually it was a snake bite, and it poisoned him, and he collapsed and nearly drowned because he fell over in the river. So it nearly killed him. So, but it hardly hurt, and he said in the moment of doing it, he was walking through thinking, what would cause that? I'm in the bush, there's lots of thorny things about. Oh, it's a thorn, feels like a thorn, it's a thorn. So he carried on, it didn't hurt. He recovers from this, and a couple of years later, before he can go out in the bushes again, and he's out in the bush, and he walks through this thing, and this thing hits him, and he goes, ah, what feels like that? I thought it was a thorn last time, but it was a snake. And he went down in the agony of this snake bite, and he writhed all over the floor, and they took him off to hospital with all the symptoms of a snake bite, and he'd scratched himself on the thorn. So the brain gives you the appropriate thing of what it thinks it needs to give you. So when we get pain, if you cut your finger slightly, it'll give you a bit of pain, just so you keep noticing it, so you'll make sure you keep it clean while it heals up. If you get a deep cut, you get a lot of pain. So it goes, oh, you might need a stitch in there and get it sorted. If you break your arm and you didn't have pain, you would keep using your arm, and then eventually the bone would come through and you'd have a soggy arm that you couldn't use, but you wouldn't go and do anything about it because there's no pain. And then eventually it would go septic and you would die. So when something's new, we need pain because the message is go and sort it out. Now imagine that broken arm. You get so much pain with it, it's unbelievable, that you can't think about, oh, have I had dinner yet? You go up to the hospital and you have it mended. And to mend it, they put a plaster on it. And as soon as they put the plaster on, the pain goes away, but it's still broken. So why would the pain go away if it's broken? Well, because the brain goes, I've done all I can for it, there's nothing else I can do, so why do I need pain? So it lets go of it. Because it hasn't had the pain that long. When you get old pain or pain for a long length of time, it forms this neural pathway that goes pain, and it starts off as a small filament. And if you have it for a long time, it strengthens over that period of time. So if we have chronic pain, the pain actually gets worse all the time because it's building up this connection that goes, oh, got pain, got pain, got pain, and it keeps rehearsing. And every time it goes down this thing, it's like walking down your grass in the garden to put stuff on the washing line. At the beginning of the year, it's the thin trail, but by the end of the year, you've got a nice muddy patch. And your brain's no different. If it gets used a lot, it turns into this highway. So you've made a connection in your brain that attaches itself to this pain. There's nothing you can do about it. And in fact, you go to the doctors to have the pain killed. Right? You have painkillers, right? So, if you were to turn the pain off yourself now, that wouldn't be any harm at all, because even doctors say, we would like to turn the pain off for you. Okay? So it's not going to do any harm at all if you turn the pain off. And in fact, you see, I'm bargaining with her unconscious at the moment. So, the other thing is, and not many people understand this, is that if you have pain in a certain area all the time, eventually, if something else came along that needed to say, hey, there's something else wrong here, you wouldn't notice it because you've all the time got pain there. So if somebody got a tumour on their back but always had back pain and the tumour came along, it couldn't go, oh, I'm a tumour. It would just go, I'm still painful. So you wouldn't know about it. So it's actually safer to remove old pain to allow for the fact that if new pain comes along that it can actually show up and you can get something done about it. So you would absolutely agree with me that turning your pain off would do you no harm whatsoever.
Sometimes that's
yeah, but just answer my question. You would absolutely agree with me that turning your pain off would do you no harm whatsoever.
Well,
it would just be good for you.
Because it's multi-year old time.
Right.
So you get to live with it.
Okay. So if I ask you your level of pain at the moment in your neck, out of 10, so naught being, well, I'm all right with it, and 10 being the worst pain you've ever had, what would the level?
It's not so bad now because I've just had injections.
Okay, but what's the level of pain there now? Are we
about four?
About a four. Okay. So if we could turn that down a bit, instantly, you'd know this works. Okay. Just give me yeses. I'm only asking. They're not technical questions. These.
No.
All I want is a yes. Okay. So it would be all right to turn your pain off, and you and your unconscious both understand it would be all right for you to turn that pain off,
yeah.
And it wouldn't hurt you. Just give me a yes.
Yes.
Yes. Okay. Right. Now, are you okay at standing?
Yeah.
All right, to stand up. Can you stand up for me? Right, am I right to touch your shoulders and just move you about? Okay. What I'm going to do, I just want you to...
I maybe can't keep looking at you.
No, that's fine. You don't need to look at me. I'm quite ugly, so I won't move. So, what I'm going to ask in a minute, I want your unconscious... This is not anything you're going to do. This is your unconscious mind. Right? I want your unconscious in a minute to give you a sign for yes, which is either pushing you forward or back. Not enough to knock you off your feet, but enough to show you it's not you doing it. Okay? So I want you now to ask your unconscious mind to give you a signal for yes.
What, to push me back and forwards?
Yep, one way or the other.
Yeah, yes.
Just ask inside.
Yes.
No, I want it to show you so that you know it's not you saying yes. So I want your unconscious to move you like that or like that so that you go, what on earth was that? Okay? So I just want your unconscious to give you a yes. Just wait for it. Right. Now, just stand at the side of you. I'd just like your unconscious to give you a sign for yes. Just to show you it exists. Oh, going backwards, aren't you? Can you not see that? Can everybody else see it? Yeah. Okay. What I'd like your unconscious to do, it gave us a sign for yes, but I'd like it to exaggerate it a bit so that you, and you're perfectly safe with me, so I just want it to give you a lot more movement and a lot more sudden than that, so that, oh, there you go, that's it. Okay, that's your sign for yes, from your unconscious. So your unconscious has heard every word I've said, hasn't it? Just give me a yes. Okay, and your unconscious agrees with me that turning the pain off in your neck would only be better for your life. It wouldn't be harmful to you. Give me a yes. Okay, thank you. So what I'd like your unconscious to do, because it's agreed that this would do no harm to you and actually would be better for your life, I would like your unconscious mind now to zone in on any pain in your neck and either turn it right down. Keep turning it down as far as you can, as far as you possibly can, or turn it completely off. And I'd like to do it now. And as soon as it's turned that pain off, I want it to give you a yes. I want you to turn the pain off or right down and then give me a yes when it's installed. Should only take a second or two. Just relax, just let it happen. Just give us a yes when you've installed that program to switch off the pain or turn it right down. Oh yes, that's it. Okay, install it, give me a yes. Yeah, brilliant. Okay, right, I want to thank your unconscious for working with us. I want you to sit down. Okay, yeah, just... Okay, just thank your unconscious for working with us. And just want to think about your neck now. And just have a little move around, see how you feel. It's pulling on that side, okay. But how does it feel compared with how it was before we started? You're all right to... It's okay.
Yeah.
What number would you give it now, out of 10?
Seven.
Mm. We've gone up then. Okay, so I'm just going to ask your unconscious, just while you sat there, it might have been because you stood up for a while, right? But I just want your unconscious now, because it's given you the yes, I just want it to do this internally now. I want it to go up to your neck, and I wanted to see if it can release any tension in your neck. Because the problem is when we have a joint injury or whatever, as that joint becomes immobile, it's because all the muscles have gone into tension. And when they go into tension, the next ones up and down actually hold on to things and have to work twice as hard because that one's not working. And then eventually they go into tension. So what's happening is all the way up your neck is this tension. So I just want you to close your eyes for a few seconds. And I'd just like to talk to your unconscious. And what's your name?
Dorothy.
Dorothy. Okay.
Dot.
Okay, what I want Dot's unconscious to do now is I want it to go in that area of her neck, and I want it to start to see if there's any areas that will do her more good than harm, where it can start to relax those areas of the neck. And I just want you to say internally to yourself, relax, relax, and then totally relax. And find any other area of your neck that you can do. And if there's any inflammation there, I want your unconscious to start the work on it now. It might not happen immediately, but I want it to start the work now to actually start to relax and release those joints in your neck a bit. Enough that it's a very safe operation to do. And take away any inflammation that's there that hinders the progress of your neck recovering. And as soon as it's installed that, give Dot a yes, in whatever format you want to. Can you notice Dot's head moving about? This is the brain processing it now. So it's sort of looking, is there any reason I shouldn't? Is this a good idea? What will happen if I do? What will happen if I don't? If I've convinced it enough, it will now do all the things I've asked it to do. It will only do it if it's in Dot's best interest. So if releasing a neck up would mean that she then starts doing cartwheels or doing stupid things that would then damage your neck, it won't let her do that. It would bring, as soon as she did something far too strenuous, it would go, ooh, no, this isn't what we agreed. Right? And it would give her the pain back. But if she sticks to the fact of living life like she does now, she doesn't actually need the pain there to remind her she's got a problem in her neck. And if that pain doesn't go, if anything else came on her neck, she wouldn't know it was there. So as much as your unconscious can do now, I want it to remove as much pain as it can. Release that inflammation. Release the tension in your neck. Relax. Relax. And then totally relax. Okay, you can open your eyes now, Dot. Come gently back into the room. Okay, how are you feeling now?
Okay.
Have we got
me checking because it does do.
Right, okay. But that happens when people are processing stuff as well. So, right. We don't know how well that will work. And we'll see over the next few weeks. Yeah. Okay. But when it does do it, it does it permanently. Because there's absolutely no point in switching off the pain, just going, well, I'll do it while I'm in front of Stephen, but then I'll give you it back again. If I've convinced it enough that you don't need pain and that you can manage without it and it's safe for you, it will switch that pain off or turn it right down for you. Okay? Mm-hmm. Thanks for your help. All right. Okay, how are we doing for time, darling?
It's 10 to.
10 to, okay. Right, so this is brain bargaining. Right, so I'll just show you a quick tip for getting rid of negative thoughts and turning them into positive ones. Because I've mentioned about if you think about the wrong thing, it attracts you to it. Whereas if you actually think about the right thing, it attracts you to that. So it's a matter of switching from, oh, I'm thinking about the thing I don't want, I want to think about the thing I do want. And there's a very simple method I have for this, and so I'd like you all to put your hand out like that and cup it, as though you're going to hold something on it. And on that hand, I'd like you to imagine that you've got negative written across it, right? And on the back of your hand, you've actually got positive written, but you can't see that at the moment, okay? So you've got negative. I want you to take a negative thought that you've got at the moment, any problem in your life that's negative, that you keep thinking about over and over and over again, it keeps coming back to you, okay? Have you all got one? Okay. I want you to now imagine taking that out of your head and turning it into something real on your hand, all right? And as you take it out of your head, I want you to give it a shape and a form appropriate for a worry or a problem that you've got. And bounce your hand up and down and actually get until you can actually feel it in your hand. There's a weight to it, all right? So it's got a colour, it's got a texture, it's got a shape, it's got a form, it's a real thing and it's on your hand, okay? So you've got that negative thought now. And every time you have a negative thought that really bothers you, not every single negative thought, because we have thousands a day, I want you to do that. Take this negative out of your head. And I want you to notice that if you put your hand further away from your head, it actually has less impact on you. And if you put it back towards your head, it actually starts to affect you again. So put it out a bit and away from you, where it's got less impact. And as you do that, I just want you to think about, well, that's the thing you don't want. So I now want you to turn your hand over so you've got the positive side up. Now, as you turn your hand over and you see positive written on your knuckles, just understand now that whatever problem you had a few seconds ago has now fallen on the floor, right? We'll get the cleaners to sweep them up later. And as you look at that, the back of your hand, and it says positive on it, I now want you to think of, well, that was what I didn't want. What is it I want to happen? And you can't use mustn't, shouldn't, can't, won't, I don't, any of those words. You have to have, that's what I don't want, this is what I do want. All right? Now, has everybody got the exact opposite of what this, have you found the way of getting the exact opposite? Are you all right with it? Did you find the exact opposite of what you want? So you're happy with the end result? Okay. Now, what I'd like you to do... Hi, come on in.
Sorry, I'm finding out where the conference room is, that's all.
No problem. Okay. So, just put your hands down for a moment. Now, that's one way of dealing with something. Now, if you keep getting the same problem coming back again, it's because you haven't finished it off in your head. You haven't got the answer to it. And sometimes the answer is quite simple, because you learned this program when you were younger. And when you were younger, you didn't understand what the rules were. So you're always looking for the rules. Why does that work? How does that work? Why, mummy, why? Right? We want to know how it works, so if we get in a similar circumstance, we can use those rules and go, this is how I should behave in these circumstances. Because as kids, we want to behave properly. Right? We just sometimes don't know what to do. So we're always looking for the rules. Sometimes in that rule is, there are exceptions to every rule. And we don't know that as a kid. We just go, rules are rules, you know, A before E, after, except after C and all that sort of thing. I before E, after, and we do all that. And then we realise there are exceptions when we get older. Or actually spend the rest of your life spelling ceiling wrong and receipt and things like that. And it's about, quite often we try and please everybody. And if we understand that, you know, instead of going out and finding people and trying to please them to learn how to please these really awkward people, just some people aren't, you can't please them. Some people are arseholes, right? And it's as simple as that. As soon as you learn that you can't please everybody and there is an exception to the rule, then why do you need to go out and please everybody anymore? It suddenly changes in your head. The rule is finished. It's finalised. If we have a breakup of a relationship, if we break up with them, we know all the reasons we broke up with them and why, and we might be distressed over it still because we love them but everything wasn't right or we didn't think it was right, and that's fine. But if somebody breaks up with us and we don't know why, we spend the rest of our life going, oh, what happened there? Was it me? Was it them? Was it somebody else? What happened? Did I say something? And we keep going over the same old, same old, same old. And to finish that loop off, you just have to say, I'm sick of visiting this. I'm going to go there one more time. I'm going to make a decision and you have to accept it. What can I learn from that breakup? Right? And usually it's, I picked the wrong damn person. And I fell in love too easily. I mean, that's quite often what it is. You just pick the wrong person. And it's just tough. Next time, you'll know what to look for and not what to look for. As soon as you've got that, you've finished the loop and it won't need to come anymore. So if it keeps coming back, do actually look at, well, what can I learn from this? What's the learning lesson? As soon as I finish that, it'll go away. If something comes back and you've given it the answer, or you don't know the answer, or you don't want to know the answer, or you just don't want to think about it again, next time you put it on your hand, just throw it away. Right? And there's something about the brain that if you imagine something, it's almost the same as doing it real. So if you took something from here now and threw it in the dustbin, you wouldn't expect to see it ever again, would you? And the same happens if you throw it out of your brain. The very act of you taking it out of your brain and putting it on there has actually turned it into real. And as you've made it real, then you can do what you like with it. So if you throw it away, it's gone. The brain goes, oh, I used to have that thing in my head that bothered me, but we threw it away the other day. It doesn't know. It doesn't know whether it was real or not real. Or so if you do it, and this is why we put all the other senses in there, because if you just go, oh, something in my head, go. But if you give all the other senses, so you've got sight and touch and smell, and you can add everything to it, and what you'll find is, so I'm just going to do this, everybody, just quickly before I get interrupted, is I want you to take something that you want to get rid of. You're sick of hearing about it in your head, all right? And I want you to pop it on your hand now, and I want you to give it that reality. Go for it. And we're going to do this very, very quickly. So as soon as it feels real in your hand, I want you to throw it away as hard as you can towards the front of the class. All right? Off you go. Come on. Make it real. Throw it. Really hard. No, not at me. Okay, now put your hand out again. Now, you've just thrown that away. So I'd be very surprised if you can get it there just the same. You might notice it's faded or it's lighter or it's less of colour or whatever in it. But whatever it is, even if it's the same strength, put it on your hand again and throw it away. Right? Go on, really throw it away as though, you know, it's gone. Right? Now, we're going to do this really quick now. Put your hand out, put it on, throw it away. Hand out, put it on, throw it away. Now think of Benny Hill music in the background. All right, put it on your hand, throw it away. Put it on your hand, throw it away, hand, throw it away, hand, throw it away, hand, throw it away. Okay, now put your hand out. Think of that thing you wanted to get rid of. Is it still there? Anybody still got it? Well, put your hands down then, you look silly. And that's all there is to it. So brain bargaining is just simply talking to your unconscious and never asking for a no. Will you do this? Yes, no. Will you do this? Yes, no. If it gets into the no's, you never get past that. So I'd like you to do this. Are you willing to do that? Give me a yes. You're not asking for a no. If it doesn't give you a yes, you just haven't convinced it yet. So you give it more and more reasons. So like if it's the pain, I then add on, oh, right, you're not willing to do it yet. Okay. Well, if they got something else and it was supposed to give them pain, they wouldn't notice it, would they? And then the unconscious go, oh, I hadn't thought of that one. And then you go, will you give me a yes now? And most of the time it goes, oh, yeah, that sounds sensible. So eventually you get this yes. And as soon as you've got a yes from your unconscious, it never lies to you. So if it says it'll turn the pain off, I know it'll turn the pain off, right? It might take a short while to do it, but it is lasting as well. It's not a top-up thing every week. You don't have to visit people like me every week and go and do this. Once you've bargained with your brain, I don't need this pain anymore, it's more damaging than it's good. If it agrees, it goes off or down or whatever it needs to do. And that's it over and done with. And it's the same technique I use for anxiety. I just talk to the brain, I go, this person's got anxiety, it's screwing up their life. Let it go. It was a good thing when you invented it, it's not a good thing anymore. Please let it go. And this is why you need to let go. And I keep talking to it until it goes, I give in, yeah, I'll do it. And as soon as it said it would let it go, it does. That's how it works. Okay, so I do sessions with people. I quite often do what I call a breakthrough session, which is anything from 3 hours to, I used to say 3 to 6 hours. Somebody 2 weeks ago had deep depression and was going to kill herself, and it took me 30 hours, but I still charge the same money. Okay, so she paid for 3 hours of work and she got 30 out of it. But I've learnt an incredible amount about depression in the last 2 weeks as well. So it works with anxiety sweet as anything. It turns it off. I have clients who for the next 3 days are like, I'm not sure this has worked. And I go, well, you won't do because you're anxious, aren't you? You've suffered from anxiety for 40 years. You would be anxious that the anxiety's gone. And then they realise it's fine after a week and it's fine. And I keep in touch with them. But with depression, it sort of lingers on because they haven't learned methods of coping with things. And so I have to be there for them to actually teach them how to cope with things and deal with things. Right, I've been Stephen Blake. You've been a lovely audience, thank you. And you're allowed to clap now.